I think they did the right thing.
Somebody ask them questions.
Well, I mean, I'd like to go back to the comment David made before, talking about these original games. And I feel that what made the games look successful wasn't necessarily the storyline, but it was more so the thought process involved to be able to interact with the game. Like, you spent 2 weeks trying to figure out how to move a block. And I think that is what really, the challenge is what made it really...
With friends, too. You know, you'd play these with friends, and you would have a kind of social interaction, which you don't necessarily have now. And if you do have a social interaction with certain kinds of games, you're trying to kill the other person.
Yep.
Rather than cooperate with the
Excellent.
Other person.
EverQuest is a good example. I work for a company now. I'm a 9-to-5 guy, and I'm a basic engineer geek, okay? I may seem very outgoing and forward here in this setting, and I can be. But my normal persona is I'm quiet and introvert, and I do what I'm doing, and I don't really go out and seek people. Got 80 engineers in the company. I maybe know 5 or 6 of them. Started playing EverQuest. We've got a group of about 10 players together. I know more about them now in the 3 weeks that we've started playing EverQuest together than I did in the last 5 years working side by side with them. It's a tremendous draw to have something in common that you're enjoying. It just brings out the social aspect of it.
And there are some new first-person shooters that really stress cooperative play.
Tribes.
Or the Counter-Strike or games like that.
Counter-Strike,
that
teamwork. You've got to play as a team.
Now, right?
You can't play it solo. You've got to be a team.
I disagree with, especially going back to the early days of computer, I think the story carried a lot of the games, especially text adventure games like anything from Infocom in the early 80s or... games like Portal that came out on the Commodore 64 and stuff like that. I mean, a lot of those, if it wasn't an action game, the story carried it. I mean, if it wasn't, you know, like Centipede or something like that, I think the story carried it.
Well, I think the story did keep interest and stuff, but what kept people coming back to the game, kept people talking about the game, kept people interested in the game itself.
Was the challenge.
It was the challenge.
So you had to find out how the story ends.
It's like having a book and then also having a puzzle that goes with the book, where you can't turn the next page of the book until you complete this puzzle. Well, the puzzle is the challenge, but you're right, the story is also a draw too, but they're both there.
Mm-hmm. King's Quest games.
Which ones?
The King's Quest
games. Yeah.
Yep.
Those are great.
And about this unlocking puzzles, I do assign some interactive fiction in my class, and I know that if I were assigning a regular story, students can flip through it and get an idea of the plot and fake their way through a quiz. But if I say, what's the significance of the queen in the purple section of Photopia, and somebody hasn't played it, they're totally checkmated. There's no way that they can then spill that out. So I know how far each of you got in these games, my students. Our time's up, but I don't think anybody's coming in after us. So if some of you have to leave to go someplace else, this might be a good time to take a break. But Scott has said he's perfectly willing to sit and talk with us. You have another question before you have to go?
With games like Quake 3, you know, something that comes out and pushes technology, you know, and really demands more. Do you think those games are significant?
This is a very good question.
And
final comment here. The computers you have today, these PCs with the large memory and the great video cards, do you know why they're as good as they are? It's not because of Word, it's not because of Excel. The computers you have today have been pushed to where they are today for one reason only, and that's computer games. That's what drives the technology. If you think otherwise, you're kidding. It's a $1 billion industry easily. And it's the games that require the better technology. Word will run fine on a Pentium 90. Try playing Quake 3 on a Pentium 90.
Thank you.
With games like The Sims, yeah, where you know you get closer and closer to
Thank you for coming, everybody.
A virtual reality, do you think as we get more and more powerful computers, they'll
become more and more virtual?
Simulationist interactive fiction?
You've seen Voyager's holodeck. That's where we're going. They don't have television on Voyager, and they're right. They have holodeck adventures. That's what they have. They don't have TV. They do not have any flat show me and entertain me. All the entertainment that takes place in the Star Trek universe is virtual in the holodeck. You become part of the game.
With interactive fiction, do you think that as things progress, people will write interactive fiction where they don't necessarily code every object?
Exactly right. You can't. You've got to have the tools in place that allow you to become more and more creative. People like Amanda. I was going to say Mandy. People like Amanda here shouldn't have to be a programmer to put into the media her creative thoughts. Today you have to be. 5 years, I don't think that'll be the case.
Do you think there'll be enough drive and
yes.
draw from the audience for text, or will it have?
It doesn't matter what the game is. There'll be an underlying tool that you'll be able to use to shape. Be creative as you need to. Today that doesn't exist. It will exist.
Yeah, I mean, for example, like what's carrying a lot of these games are published like 3-4 years ago is the fact that the community can modify them. Mm-hmm. And I'm
the add-ons are what are
quick.
Yeah. And I was one of the founders of this company called Warcry.com out of Boston. And basically what they're trying to do is allow and create tools on like online developer forum for allowing people to create 3D games and stuff over the internet. But I mean, average users, I mean, they want to create their own environments. And by providing them an engine, an open engine, like the Quake games, I mean, these games are still, I mean, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people playing them right now, so.
Do you think, though, we're going to get to the level of I guess a depth of story that maybe is lacking in just about all most video games right now. I mean, other than like
yeah,
those
don't confuse
EverQuest.
The video game with the PC games.
Well,
the
no,
Xbox
true, that's,
comes
you're
out,
right.
the confusion
I,
is
I mean,
gonna,
I know it's what you're saying with EverQuest, where it's essentially the people create the story.
Right.
But do you see an example where the game itself could have a depth of character and depth of
plot? I think Deus Ex already does. And Half-Life already
but
does.
But still, it's about shooting something.
That's
it's
right.
about
well, that's what
jumping
the,
over this and running down the hall. And
right. That's what
well,
the
you
story
see a lot of,
so are a lot of stories that are sold in
yeah.
novels. Tom Clancy and, you know.
Rainbow Six is a game that came out of
right. And it is
right.
a tremendous game. It is a...
Michael Crichton wrote a text-based adventure game in 1986. I forget the name escapes me.
He just wrote another one that's a piece of junk.
another game along those lines, if you don't like, I mean, it's a more set plot line, but it has different objectives, are the Thief games. Thief
right, games? I'm waiting for Thief 3. I can't wait for that to come out.
The company went under.
And guess
what's
what?
Happened?
Guess who bought them?
Who?
Spectre, the same people who did Deus Ex. Warren Spectre is doing Thief 3. It is going to be tremendous.
The original plans for Thief 3 that I'd read about online were basically to make an entire city. You have the city laid
that's
out,
right.
and that's
and
where
you
go through doing whatever you want. I mean, these are the objectives, but you can go through anything in any order.
Right, exactly
more
right.
Matrix style setup.
And after the success
God,
of after
game or what?
That goes back to, I remember I emailed you back and forth. Have you guys ever played the game called Daggerfall?
Oh, yeah.
I've heard it.
That was basically you had a map, a terrain that, I mean, this was way back,
I mean,
like Pentium 1.
Numerous countries.
Yeah, I mean, you could, like, hold the forward key and walk all afternoon and not get to the other side of the map. And basically, you could buy housing in these different cities, buy horses, wagons, equipment, shop. You could play a thief, and you could run around at night, and guards would chase you,
If you did crimes, the NPCs would start running away from you, and shopkeepers wouldn't help you out.
Mm-hmm.
You could sneak into a shop and wait until after dark and loot the place, and then go back and sell the stuff to the guy.
Oh,
you know,
The game was a little bit ahead of its time, and it was pretty buggy. And it had random dungeon generators where you'd have to save like every 5 seconds because you'd fall out a level. But I mean that game kept me for about a year. I mean that you could create any kind of character you wanted. I mean based on the RPG rules and you had so much terrain to play them. I mean I didn't even get through like the first two quests because I just got drawn into the world.
Oh, yeah,
you just ran around and did whatever I want.
Yeah. One thing I really liked about the opening character selection in Daggerfall was it gave you a short story. You know, you're walking along a stream and you see, a little puppy that's about to fall into the lake. Do you A, pick up the puppy, take it home, and nurture it? Do you B, walk by, figuring whatever, or do you C, kick it? Yes. And based on your scores, they would figure, well, if every chance you had an opportunity to be violent, you chose a violent action, then obviously you're going to want a lot of action. But if you picked up things and cuddled them and so forth, then it created plots where you were supposed to go rescue things and get magic herbs and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, even the creation of the character, depending on what you enter in the story, your character actually points differentiate.
Yeah, yeah, that was how you selected your attributes and so forth,
yeah.
Based on that. That's for people who were more interested in storytelling and weren't used to the idea of clicking the up arrow to take this particular skill and take away from charisma and add it to intelligence and stuff like that.
Also, the Ultima series had, I think it was 6 or 7, had that exact same thing.
Really? Four guys. Yeah. Four.
Oh, was it four? Okay.
Well, they
but Ultima did the same thing with the stagger power. You could go into any house and pick up any
object.
That's
basically what Ultima Online's all about now.
Yeah, well, yeah. And I mean, the whole series actually still follows the same storyline as it's been following since
Ultima's
when it came out in 82, 83.
Excellent idea. But Ultima's problem right now is it's grown long in the tooth. They just canceled Ultima 2.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, there's no more real estate. If you get into the game now as a newbie, you really can't do much. They're catering to their old players, and they don't have openings for new players. You can't buy any land, put a house up if you wanted to.
I think one of the best parts about Ultima was all the people who would find different routes to do certain things, like interesting ways to break into people's houses, exploiting bugs in programming. And I think that added a really dynamic edge to the game, because you know, if you could find out some way to confuse the game, then you could get away with it.
It wasn't there that whole when did the king get killed or something like that at one point? They had like when the game after the game first came out.
Well, here's
somebody exploited a bug and killed like the
okay.
Lead
Lord
king.
British is the guy who developed Ultima. He brought together all the crowds at his royal palace, and he's going to give this tremendous speech about it. Okay. He's the developer, mind you. Well, he forgot to equip himself with the Royal Ring of Invulnerability. Somebody hacked the game legally. He didn't do anything. He didn't exploit any bugs. He came in. He picked locks. He came through the passage. He got behind the king, and before the king could start speaking, he killed him. Banned for life.
They did. They banned him.
Yes.
It's unfair. Swear, you know?
Exactly right. And the problem is, the game is run by people. And let's face it, people are some of the sorriest people I've ever met. there's a great deal of potential in the games. And that's the point that he brought out. Something like that happening, even the developers didn't even think that this would happen. And it did.
I was thinking that maybe one of the biggest obstacles to a resurgence of text-based games would be kind of this internationalizing of gameplay, so that, you know, this isn't a PC game, but I think there's a game for the Sega Saturn that people can interact with people from other countries, and they can communicate with one another without having to use English or Japanese or whatever. And it seems to be such a wonderful
way to do
development.
It.
And I was wondering if all games are kind of moving in this direction, or if PCs already have this.
Could be. Now, the strange thing is, you know, I don't play text adventure games. I don't like them. I find them too boring.
Tedious.
Yeah. They're basically puzzle quests. And I got over that about...
Nelson made Inform, which is a computer programming language that allows people to write Infocom-style computer games. Since he released that with a detailed manual, which just came out in the fourth edition, and here you go.
Bring me one. Thanks.
The interactive fiction community on the internet has really gone into a renaissance. And, I mean, I'm an English professor type guy, and I really do think there are quite a few interactive fiction games that are definitely of the quality of at least a short story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're not talking novels here, we're not talking epics or Shakespeare, but there's, just like and I'm paraphrasing from Graham Nelson's book, but he explains that although sort of the heyday of interactive fiction is gone, it's right, to many people it's tedious. And I kind of joked a little while ago, this is how we played games, and it was fun, and everybody laughed. It was really fun. I mean, wasn't it, Dave? I mean, you know, it was either that or Pong, right? In this case, there are a lot of talented authors who, just using the tools, and there are plenty of text tools that allow you, for instance, if you want to create a door, Graham Nelson has already got a library that allows you to create a door. You don't have to deal with all the details. But if you were going to write a game that had a flying pig in it, okay, and I said, Matt, a flying pig is dumb. Make it a flying gerbil. Search and replace, the pig turns to a gerbil. Okay, so revision, and just like the simple quote, you were on a beach, unlocks vistas. With the right person, who is a talented storyteller and a talented programmer, one person can create an interactive masterpiece. Whereas EverQuest requires a lot of people. And if somebody, a computer game manufacturer, wants to innovate, wants to try something unusual, millions and millions of dollars are at stake. And the computer gaming industry is going to get a chokehold on people who want to try something radical. Unless there is freeware, open source, things like Inform, low-risk areas, where if I come out with a computer game that experiments with a new kind of NPC, and it's not a game, it's just a sit-down and have a conversation with an NPC, and that raises the bar for all other NPCs. Emily Short has done that with a short story called Galatea. The Pygmalion myth, Pygmalion creates Galatea, falls in love with her. You are an artist walking into an art gallery, and there's the statue of Galatea come to life. And it's a branching conversation tree. It's a moody character study. It's not a game. It's a different kind of textual experience. It's as different from graphic computer games as poetry is from novels, as novels are from rap music. But within that realm, within that new realm of interactive fiction, people are experimenting. They're trying new things. They're learning how to tell a story when you've got to manage all these multiple branches so that text games don't have to be tedious. Okay. Now, you know, for me, sometimes a dungeon crawl is very, very tedious, but there are times when I want to map that maze. You know, sometimes finishing a crossword puzzle. What have you done when you finished a crossword puzzle? You finished a crossword puzzle. That's all you need to do. And sometimes I want to frag bad guys. Okay? I don't always need a story. So that's where I think, where interactive fiction of 20 years ago, it really has changed quite a lot. There's an annual competition in which, if you only have time to play a couple interactive fiction games, look up the interactive fiction annual competition and play the 2 or 3 winners each year, and you'll see how far interactive fiction has come. It's definitely up there with the best of Infocom's games as far as story depth. And there are plenty of obsessed people who spend a lot of time finding stuff.
And if you want to try a graphic adventure game, there's a new one out that is was very big in Europe, and it's finally been published in the United States, and that's Longest Journey.
Longest Journey.
It can get tedious in the conversations. It's also PG-13 or R-rated at points, but it is an excellent example of what somebody can do with a graphic adventure game.
Is Inform designer's manual? What is Inform? Is it a programming language?
Inform is a computer programming language. It looks a little bit like C.
Okay.
It's object-oriented, and it's a free language that some guy created because he wanted to make interactive fiction games, and he just gave it for free over the internet.
Nice.
Look up Graham Nelson and Inform in any search engine. You'll find it. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Take my class. Writing electronic text, English 309.
Is it this Inform?
Yeah. These three of these guys, their projects in the class is writing interactive fiction using Inform.
Nice.
Is there a prerequisite for the class?
I encourage you to have taken 305, but if you're a computer programmer, that's English technical writing, because it is a writing class.
Creative
writing major, that's okay too. Yeah, computer programming is not a prerequisite because Amanda picked it up. Also, like I said, there is an obsessive group of internet fanatics. Matt posted a programming problem. He wanted to code a cigarette, a case of cigarettes, and people just sent him code. Here, try this, try that.
Wanted to what?
He wanted an object that was a pack of cigarettes in a game. And he had some specific needs. And people said, oh, well, here's a game that's got one here. Try this. And
are you using Usenet when you...
Yes, it's the Usenet discussion group, Rec Arts Int Fiction.
Okay, yeah, that's one.
rec.arts.int-fiction.
Now, I have a question. I've heard a lot of terms and a lot of people talking that are very much role-playing, like pen and, you know, paper and pencil type role-playing. How much, if any, of an influence would you say that has had? I mean, you mentioned Dungeon Crawl, you mentioned Tomb of Horrors, which is actually D&D.
Yeah, Will Crowther, the creator, right? Will Crowther, the creator of the original Colossal Cave Adventure, was a Dungeons & Dragons fan. In his role-playing in Dungeons & Dragons, his character was Willy the Thief, and in the Colossal Cave Adventure, in the maze, you meet a thief. So, definitely, absolutely. Also, J.R.R. Tolkien is another strong influence. Okay, he's bowing and scraping. Okay. Definitely, yeah. Yeah.
You know what's coming out at the same time as Episode 2?
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, the same day. Head to head.
How do you choose?
That's right. Which day is that?
When is December 9th, I think it is.
And that's when they're releasing Episode 2 now?
Episode 2 and...
All movie hopping
and Lord of the Rings, Part 1. They're almost done. They are done with the filming. They're doing the editing.
Christmas season. They're not going to release it December 25th.
They filmed all three Lord of the Rings. It's done, but they're only going to release them
one a year. There's the Matrix. Yeah, no, and I've seen that.
Write your congressman.
I've been paying enough attention to Episode 2 to know that, because I'm just a fantasy fan.
What's your take on the bleed over between the Legend Quest and selling things on eBay? Do you think that's going to get more and more prevalent?
That's a good question. I went out to eBay and did a search on EverQuest. Try it yourself sometime. I found somebody selling in-game money for real-world money. In other words, you want to buy a 2,000 platinum, cost you $100. You want to buy a full character that's already at level 50, cost you $1,500. There's a lot of...
If you have nothing better to spend your money...
Were there bids on them?
Yes. And you know who's paying it? Guys similar to me. Older guys that get hooked into the game, that have a successful career...
And have lives, yeah.
And that have lives and want to play the game at a higher level and don't want to...
Have spells.
Work their way.
Building up the points.
To me, it's not a waste. To me, the fun is the build-up. I don't want to be that higher level character unless I got there on my own. But other people play differently. They just enjoy playing the higher level character.
Do you think as games become more sophisticated, that's going to happen more and more?
Sure. You'll pay somebody to play the game for you and get it to the point where it is that you want to play it at.
Start a business idea, guys.
There are some guys, that's all they do is play EverQuest and sell their characters, or play UO and sell their characters. I'm serious. There are people that make a living at that.
And I thought I was a nerd.
College, you know?
You're in trouble for sitting on the computer all night, so.
I'm talking to one guy that works at Boeing. He's got a level, I'm a level 12 now, I'm pretty proud of it. He's got five level 60 characters. He said, as an experiment, he's got a level 45 barbarian that he's been playing for 5 days. That's 5 in-game days. My level 12 character, I looked at his playtime, 5 days. Big disparity here. He says, wanted to know when he was on. He says, well, I'm usually on between daily, Monday through Friday, from 5 p.m. to midnight, and I get on earlier on weekends.
Does he have a family?
I do not know if he does. I don't know how.
It's not a very happy family.
He does have a family, but they all live on EverQuest.
He has extra computers for them.
There are weddings on EverQuest. There's a new. I just found a new website. It's called EQWidows.com. And it is so sad. This woman's saying, and my husband, he got on this, and I went and I read his chats, and he's been married on EverQuest, and he has this sex slave on EverQuest. Is there a way I can get him a divorce? It's incredible. It is so sad, and it's true. It is a tremendous addiction for some people, and it is going the wrong way there, let me tell you. That is going the wrong way.
At 5 o'clock, over in Hibbert Hall penthouse. We have snacks, and we'll continue this. I thought we'd give Scott a bit of a break if you need one. If you want to keep going, you're welcome to. But just letting everybody know that, you know, we're not rushing off or anything.
We've got another meeting at.
At 5 o'clock, right?
I thought we had a meeting at 4.
Four o'clock. I'm sorry. 4 to 5.
You'll be at the 5 o'clock. I'll go to the 4.
Nah. I'm sorry. You're right. It is 4 to 5. That's right. Yeah.
The rest of you show up at 5.